public sector labor unions were handed a significant setback today. In a 5-4 ruling, the U.S. Supreme Court said that unions cannot force non-members to pay union dues. That overturns a 1977 decision that said requiring non-members to help defray the cost of collective bargaining prevents freeloading and ensures labor peace. The case that was ruled on today centered on an employee from Illinois named Mark Janis. He sued his AFSCME union, arguing that he shouldn't have to pay dues to support positions he opposes. The ruling affects about 5 million workers in 22 states. Most public employee unions in Wisconsin won't be affected because Act 10 had already limited their ability to collect those dues. Public safety unions, including police and fire, were exempted from Act 10, so they will be affected by the ruling. Also today, Justice Anthony Kennedy announced he's retiring from the court next month, giving President Trump an opportunity to solidify the conservative wing of the court.
We will begin our search for a new justice of the United States Supreme Court that will begin immediately. And hopefully we're going to pick somebody who will be as outstanding.
Richard Wolff is a U.S. Supreme Court correspondent for USA Today. Richard, thanks a lot for joining us.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
We had called you originally about this labor ruling. We'll spend most of our time on that, but I want to hear from you on Justice Kennedy's retirement. There was speculation, but I think it still came as a surprise to a lot of people.
Well, you know, it's been speculated upon for a couple of years now. A lot of people thought that he would retire last year at the end of the term, and he did not. There was simply no word whatsoever from him. This term, oddly enough, I think fewer people were expecting him to retire. And lo and behold, and then we were all waiting on tenterhooks this morning because it was possible that it would be announced as part and parcel of the end of the terms, final decisions, et cetera. Nothing happened then. And then a couple of hours later came the announcement that he had sent a letter, that he had hand-delivered a letter, as a matter of fact, to President Trump announcing his retirement after 30 years. So not totally a surprise, but we never really knew when to expect it. And so now the process begins.
How big a difference could a Trump appointee be on the court, whoever ends up replacing Justice Kennedy?
Well, the first answer is huge. It's not nearly as big a difference, say, as 1991, when President George H.W. Bush got to replace Justice Marshall with Clarence Thomas. That was a complete flip from a very liberal to a very conservative justice. It's more like 2006. When Justice Sandra Day O'Connor retired and President Bush was able to nominate Justice Samuel Alito, that was replacing a somewhat moderate swing vote, albeit someone who was a Republican president's nominee, to someone who was more solidly conservative. And I think you could compare what's about to happen almost exactly to what happened in 2006. I should add, however, that Justice Kennedy this year, this term, was very solidly with the conservatives, the other four conservatives, in almost all of the important cases right through to today. So, you know, if you looked at, you know, how would this term have been any different, it probably wouldn't have been any different. The difference comes on issues such as same-sex marriage, which, you know, you can translate into a lot of other gay rights issues, abortion, to some degree affirmative action. Some of the social issues where Justice Kennedy has lined up with liberals. And 2 and 3 years ago, he was more often with the liberals on those types of cases than with the conservatives. So that would be the biggest change. The question is, can President Trump get a very conservative, capital V, very conservative nominee through the Senate with only 51 Republicans? And that includes the ailing John McCain. Without him, it would be 50-plus Vice President Pence. So I don't think he can go with somebody who is seen by, say, some of the more moderate Republican senators, there are a couple of those left, as extremely conservative. But most of the people on his list of 25 potential nominees probably would pass muster with all the Republicans in the Senate.
Talking to Richard Wolff, U.S. Supreme Court correspondent for USA Today. We'll be watching that story play out in the months to come. Richard, let's look at this ruling we originally called you about, came out this morning. How big a difference is this going to be for public employee unions?
Well, at first blush, it looks terrible. The question is, and I can't answer this part of it, is what the unions do to try to make it more palatable. What basically happened, and this was expected, is the court ruled that public employee unions can't collect what's called agency shop or fair share fees from non-members. Those are fees that come to about 80%. It varies from state to state, but 70, 80, 90% of what union members pay in dues. And these are fees that those non-members have to pay for collective bargaining. The unions have always said, and it goes back to a 1977 Supreme Court case that said this, that you can't charge non-members for politics, for the money that you, the public employee union, spends in elections. But you can charge them for all the costs of representing them. The argument against it and the argument that carried the day with the five conservatives in the court is that these are public unions. So virtually everything they do affects the public fisc, affects public tax dollars. And therefore, even when the non-members pay for what is allegedly collective bargaining, they're helping support the unions that take positions vis-a-vis public affairs and tax money that they don't agree with. And so, if that money disappears from the public employee unions and they don't do something to replace it, it could have a big effect.
And the majority, do they argue, I guess, on free speech First Amendment grounds? That was that part of the debate here?
That was the whole thing, really, for the majority. It's compelled speech. There were other cases this year, for instance, having to do with that baker in Colorado who wouldn't bake a cake for a same-sex couple's wedding, that fell into the category of what's known as compelled speech. You're compelling these non-members to speak with their dollars. Remember, this is a Supreme Court that considers campaign spending to be speech. So they're in essence being forced to speak with their money by contributing to public unions that they don't want to contribute to. So it was seen as a First Amendment issue by the Republicans, and by the five conservatives on the Supreme Court. And they've been trying to get this exact type of case to the court for 6 years. There was a case in 2012, another in 2014, and another in 2016 that all moved in this direction. The first two made sort of progress toward the conservative justices' ultimate goal. And then 2 years ago, they thought it was a slam dunk that they were going to do exactly what they did today. But shortly before the case was heard, Justice Scalia died, and so they only had four votes, and ultimately it was a 4-4 tie requiring another case. That one was a California Teachers Union case. This one was out of Illinois involving a state employee, a social worker for the state. But they were finally able, the conservatives on the court were finally able to do what they had wanted to do all along, and it's very unusual and very rare that they basically say we are overruling one of our own decisions, in this case a decision called Abood versus Detroit Board of Education that dated back to 1977.
We'll leave it there for now. Richard, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Anytime. Thank you very much.
That's Richard Wolff, U.S. Supreme Court correspondent for USA Today. We talked with him about today's 5-4 ruling that says government workers who choose not to join a union cannot be required to pay union dues.